ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
No more news on Facebook. Yes, this week on Download This Show, Facebook says it could stop paying news publishers, and that means an end to an agreement between tech companies, news publishers, and the government. Also on the show, why are Elon Musk and the co-founder of ChatGPT feuding? Plus, could TikTok be about to disappear from millions of phones? All of that and much more coming up. This is your guide to the week in media, technology, and culture. My name is Mark Fennell, and welcome to Download This Show. Yes, indeed. It is a brand new episode of Download This Show, and you will be pleased to know that I have two people in front of me that are far more professional than I. Joining us from the Game for Anything podcast and friend of the show extraordinaire, it's two things that probably don't need to go together. Angharad, yo, welcome back to Download This Show.
I do consider myself to be an extraordinaire friend. Thanks, Mark.
Oh, it feels like it should be written glitter and sparkle pens. Also written in glitter and sparkle pens from Capital Brief, journalist Daniel Van Boom.
Thank you for having me. I feel like I've been set up for failure with this more professional than you situation, but I'll do my best.
He's set expectations and now it's your job to meet them.
We have 28 minutes to defy all expectations of us. 28 minutes that's probably not going to be filmed with reading news on Facebook. There's been, I would argue, the most predictable story because we kind of knew this was going to happen, but walk us through it. If you are used to looking at news content on Meta-owned platforms like Facebook and Instagram, very soon may not be the case, Angharad.
Yes, because Facebook have come up and said, hey, you know that media bargaining code that you brought in 2021 that was so special?
Sounds like Metacoms. Definitely does.
We are just simply going to ignore it. We're not doing that. We're not interested. So they've said that they're not going to renew the deals that they signed at that time. And as a result, unless the Australian government backs down slash changes their stance, there just simply is not going to be any news on these platforms.
There is something deeply predictable about this. It's a throwback for us how we got to this position in the first place, right, Daniel? So we had governments, and not just Australia, by the way, governments overseas, Canada as well, asking Meta to pay for their news content on their services. This was a couple of years ago, and there was a game of brinksmanship where Facebook were like, no, we're going to take everything off, but also some other things that aren't news. I don't know why when we personify Facebook, they've become like cartoon characters, but that's where we're at today. And so this was the deal, the place that was put in place was the deal where they would give money essentially to media news organizations. Tell me if I've gotten that wrong.
Yeah, that's basically it. So people may recall in 2021, they may have woken up to find that news was mysteriously not on their Facebook page. That was because Facebook, once this law was passed, Facebook was like, hey, we're super not into that. The way the law works is if Facebook and Google are not seen to be making significant contributions to the news landscape, They'll be designated under the code, which essentially means the Treasury will oversee negotiations between Facebook, in this case, and the news media. So Facebook at the moment pays $70 million a year, thereabouts, and under the code, if they're forced to the bargaining table, it could be many, many millions more than that, which is why Facebook's argument is like, their statistic is 3%. 3% of our engagement comes from news content. We'd rather just give that up than pay the millions of dollars.
There's also the thing that they've now seen overseas that they can shut down news on their services and it's sort of okay for them. So the good example is Canada, right? Canada's done this, haven't
they?
Yeah,
for a while now there has been no news on these platforms in Canada and it seems to be absolutely business as usual for these Meta platforms. They simply don't care. And that's kind of the whole problem with these codes. At the moment, it seems to be governments, you know, trying to champion news, which is a great thing, but coming to these platforms and saying, we have something extremely valuable that you want and we want you to pay for it. And we're simply finding out that it is not that valuable to these platforms.
There was a situation where, and I'd love to understand this a bit more, where Meta and Google had given money to media organizations and from that jobs were created. I know the ABC created a bunch of jobs for money from the tech companies. Where does that sit within this arrangement?
So that is actually one of the many flaws of the news media bargaining code is that there's very little transparency. So the ABC and The Guardian were among the publications to get money from these Meta and Google. But they were the only ones who said like, hey, I think the ABC said, we're going to hire 60 rural journalists with this money. But actually, the media publications were under no obligation to actually explain how that money is used. So the main beneficiaries of it are 9, 7 and News Corp. Theoretically, that money can just go to dividends to shareholders or like a marketing budget or a new building. There's no actual need for them to show everyone how that money is being spent.
So those deals are coming to an end now? Is that
Google's deals are 5 years, so that would be 2026. And Facebook's years are 3 years, So they're in two fundamentally different positions, right? Because Google, I don't think anyone can argue Google's business can thrive without linking, surfacing news links, right? Whereas Facebook, I think quite plausibly can say, this is way more fuss than it's worth, especially in an election year. Like, I think the last thing they can be bothered to deal with is another round of, like, you ruined the election. And when engagement is as high off cat videos, it feels like paying hundreds of millions of dollars for something that I actually don't care about is not super up their alley.
As painful as it will be for media organizations to not have this, like, cash injection they've had for the last couple of years, certainly from Facebook anyway, maybe it's good that news and tech companies are not entwined together in that way.
Yeah. It's a really tricky thing because I guess it's that ongoing conversation of what is the role of social media. Like, we used to call it social networking because it was just a platform within which we could talk to our friends. And in that way, it does kind of make sense to share things with each other that we think is important. But over time, that has changed to social media, which is more broadcasting. It's people blasting out their opinions to the rest of the world rather than just talking to their friends. And that starts to change the culture and landscape. And when you look at it through that lens, you do start to say, well, the content that's being created and put on these platforms is a product for, you know, Facebook or whoever, rather than it just being people's own conversations. And therefore, these companies have a little bit more responsibility over what's posted. And that's where it starts to get hairy. That's kind of why we've ended up where we are. But the problem is, right, that news isn't necessarily profitable. It's important, but there's a divide between important and engaging, and these companies run off engaging. They don't really care about important. So I think maybe there needs to be a shift in how news is thought about in general, and thus who is creating news.
I would also add to that that the premise of the law is that there's a market imbalance between the tech companies and media companies because they both, their business is the advertising business. So like the premise is like, oh, well, Facebook gets, I'm throwing a number out there, but like 40% of the digital advertising, whereas media companies get 5%, which makes sense, I guess. But then does that make it Facebook's responsibility to solve that problem or pay for news? I don't necessarily think so, because Facebook can get out of the news business completely and still monopolize that or duopolize that advertising spend, and that doesn't really solve the problem at all.
One of the questions I have here is that there are a few media organisations that really have built their business on social media. One of the ones that stands out to me is the Daily Oz, and the reason it stands out is because they literally made a video earlier in the week, their name presenters, basically talking about how they think they may disappear from these particular platforms. I get that legacy media has other ways of connecting with audiences. It's still digital, so newsletters, X still exists. You know, there are other things, right? What about those organizations, the ones that have built this, you know, this whole business on top of social? What happens to them in this situation?
Yeah, they die. They heaps die, hey. Because the problem is you're then asking your audience to follow you to, for example, your own website. And we already know that that kind of like click through is fairly low. A lot of people just read headlines. They don't necessarily fully engage with articles. And then you add on top of that, they're not being served that link to begin with. People are just gonna forget, I reckon. And I think that's a really sad thing because I do think there's a lot of innovation and interesting niche voices that are able to build upon these platforms because it gives them access to an audience much quicker than if they're just trying to build something in a corner that no one's looking at. There just needs to be a really big shift in how these platforms are used to begin with. And we just have been saying that for years.
All they podcast.
Oh,
if in doubt, podcast.
Yeah, that's true.
Download This Show is what you're listening to. It is your guide to the week in media, technology and culture. Our guest this week, Daniel Van Boon from Capital Brief and from the Game for Anything podcast, Angharad Yo. Mark Fennell is my name. And it was a good week for doctored photos, wasn't it?
Visually rich week.
If you are just catching up, across this week there's been much discussion about a picture of the Princess of Wales and whether it has been doctored. Obviously, there's been some questions as to her whereabouts. She posted a picture on Mother's Day and almost immediately it was pulled from news agencies for having been doctored. It seems, at time of recording, that it was most likely just some, you know, slightly subpar photoshopping. She's put out a statement herself that she's copped to it. But actually, when it comes to doctored images in the news, this is kind of the very shiny, glitzy tip of the iceberg. There was a story earlier this week, Daniel Van Boom, out of Queensland about the Queensland Symphony Orchestra posting an AI picture that caused a huge uproar as well.
Yeah, so whoever runs their social media channel was trying to, you know, get people to the matinee session on a Saturday. And the promotional picture they used was like a very clearly, obviously AI generated. And I guess like that's caused a bit of a furor because I think there's this idea of like, hey, that's money that could have gone to a photographer who could have shot a nice image for you. But I actually think it kind of does the opposite. Like it kind of backfired and shows people that photography and actual artistry still very valuable. Because I feel like if this kind of shows that like if you use AI generated art for your promotional materials and it's clearly AI generated art, it's a bit of a turnoff.
It also just seems like a really weird step for an institution of the arts. Like,
yeah, that feels like the crux of where they've gone wrong here, right?
Like, you guys are supposed to be the upper echelon of the arts. You're the ones that have the suits and the champagne flutes and you require people to be clean to come in and see your works. And then you're using, like, the most debased form of...
Were you turned away from a concert for being too dirty? That seems like a very specific slide.
Look, Mark, that's not what we're on right now. But it's kind of, you expect this sort of stuff from like that Willy Wonka experience that happened somewhere, I think it was in the UK.
Scotland.
Yeah.
For reference, in Scotland, somebody posted an ad for like a Willy Wonka experience and they used AI pictures and it looked like Willy Wonka. And then they got there and it looked very much like a warehouse with some streamers and sad.
Very, very sad. That is where I see AI art promotion kind of living, not with the fancy orchestras.
What I find interesting about this story in particular is we're at the bleeding edge where we are deciding as a society where we think AI is acceptable and where it isn't acceptable. And the idea of a cultural organization for them to use an AI-generated image to sell themselves, it clearly demonstrated itself to be a boundary that we're not willing to cross as a society, which is intriguing to me, Daniel.
Definitely. And I mean, I think the real shame of it all is just like how blatantly, obviously AI-generated it is. So in the image, it's like this couple at like seated at the orchestra, but the orchestra is behind them for some reason in the stands, and the woman has like a leather box on her like lap for some reason, and the man is wearing a tuxedo that's kind of got like some of her dress randomly on his leg.
Yeah, I just noticed that.
Yeah, it's like one of those things where it's like, how many things are wrong with this image? And you like have to circle them.
Normally you just count the fingers, and yes. Now I'm looking at it going,
I think the woman's fingers are...
1, 2, 3. Numerous.
Yes, too numerous.
Well, it's quite hard to work out her fingers and his fingers. Sorry, this is just going to be me counting fingers on national radio. 1, 2, 3. No, she's only got 4 fingers. That's what's wrong with it. There it is. He's got 8, but she's got 4. Because science.
Nearly evens out.
The reporting out of this, particularly in The Guardian, I thought was quite interesting. But one point that I think was worth observing is that AI is being used increasingly to form briefs for photographers, for graphic designers. To be honest, I'm guilty doing this. I did it the other day. I was like, I wanted to describe something and I used AI to kind of build a couple of elements and then I photoshopped them together and went, can we do a shoot that looks like this? And increasingly for like, when it comes to photo shoots for like, producing TV shows and stuff like that, I'm getting producers and directors and graphic designers send me AI versions of myself in
Ooh.
Frames. Yeah, it's weird. Like, we'd like to shoot you like this. And I'm like, what is that? And I'm like, that's what AI thinks you look like. And I'm like, I'm going to have nightmares for a month. So increasingly AI is being used to help the process of shooting things for real or designing things for real. I guess the question is, do we think it will stay there? Is this an example of us putting a line in the sand? Where you think it will stay there? Or is it likely to just take over as the technology improves, do you think?
I think, like most things in the world, it will come to a sort of middle ground. I think that there's a lot of people who don't necessarily care if something's AI. They don't necessarily value the human touch in art. They just want to see the pretty colors, and that's fine. And I think that it's also going to galvanize people who consider themselves to be very imbued in the arts, and they're going to take a stronger stance and champion human works further. I do think that you're right, that conceptual space is really powerful for these kinds of tools, for people who very admittedly don't have the skills necessarily to create what it is they want to create, so they can easily make an example that they can give in a brief. For like, it's a lot easier to do that than it is to try and draw a storyboard if you also can't draw.
No. Although, Lord help us when the Princess of Wales finally works out how to use AI, because Lord knows what will happen to those pictures then. I feel a bit bad. I mean, if the statement that she put out earlier in the week is true, and at time of recording, there's no reason to question that it isn't, unless you're a conspiracy theorist, I do feel a bit bad, because I reckon I've probably done some dodgy photoshopping over the years and I've not faced this that much poor scrutiny. So if that statement does turn out to be true, then I actually feel quite a bit bad for
her. I'm going to troll through your Instagram and find the one with you with four photo fingers.
Well, I mean, how do you know I don't have four fingers?
True.
Download This Show is what you're listening to. It is your guide to the week in media, technology and culture. And Ankarad, why is there a feud between the co-founder of ChatGPT and drink Elon Musk?
Look, I'm going to say it every time he comes up, mildly because of Elon Musk's ego.
He has an ego?
I have reason to believe that. He might.
We've been reliably informed.
So
by his own Twitter account.
Elon recently filed a lawsuit against OpenAI in California, saying that they breached the founding agreement of the company by pursuing commercial success instead of benefiting humanity. So essentially, he said, you said that you were going to share your tech with the public. You said that you were going to be a tool for the good of mankind and guide AI into a space where it's righteous and kind. And instead, what you've done is taken billions of investment dollars from big tech, turned it into a for-profit thing, and that's not what was discussed and agreed upon. Obviously, Elon Musk was a part of OpenAI when it first started, and there are allegations that he tried to merge the company with Tesla and become CEO of both, and that he, in fact, supported a for-profit version of OpenAI at the time, but has since flipped. Potentially because the company has done very, very well without him. He did step back from the company. And he said that they've changed their company values and it's not okay.
So in other words, he just recreated that scene from Star Wars where he said, you were the chosen one. You were Sith. Destroy the Sith. Not join them. Bring balance to the Force. Not leave it in darkness. That's what Elon Musk is doing right now, Daniel?
Yep, pretty much.
Well, the difference being that Obi-Wan was right. Do we think that Musk is right?
There's a podcast in and of itself. Do we think that Musk is right? Question mark.
I think, well, whether or not there's, so as part of this lawsuit, as Rad just explained, OpenAI released a bunch of emails that Elon sent, which basically contradicts everything he says in the lawsuit. But there is something to the fact that, so like the background on this is that, this is Elon Musk's version of events, that Elon Musk had a conversation with Larry Page, the co-founder of Google, in like 2014.
God, this is like the All-Stars, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like watching the Harlem Globetrotters of money.
Yeah. And in Elon's telling of the story, Elon was like, oh, AI is going to kill humanity pretty bad. And Larry Page was like, oh, maybe that's not so bad because, you know, if AI is stronger, like it deserves to live. And Larry Page was like, Elon, you're a humanist, like in a bad way, like racist humanist for preferring humans. That's Elon Musk's recollection of that conversation. So that spurred him. So Google didn't have a monopoly on AI. That spurred Elon to invest heavily in OpenAI. So the whole premise of that investment was OpenAI would be open source. It's like a non-profit organization for research purposes to kind of counterweight Google. And to be sure, there are definitely criticisms of OpenAI about how closed their like AI systems actually are. Like, so for instance, like what is the carbon impact of developing GPT-4, which is their latest AI model? Mm-hmm. Like researchers don't know because they won't tell basic information about how big the model is, how it was trained, et cetera, because that's like technically a trade secret. So that is one of many ways in which OpenAI has been criticized for being too closed and lacking transparency. So what Elon Musk says, certainly, I'm sure there'd be a lot of people begrudgingly agreeing with him. The question now becomes, in a court of law, what other juicy emails do they have of Elon Musk contradicting himself?
The problem with the idea of making it all open source publicly available, though, is that feels exactly counter to the idea of keeping it safe, right? If you're kind of... It's sort of like back in the day where there was the Anarchist's Cookbook, right? And you could go into the deep, dark parts of the internet and find a manual that teaches you how to do all sorts of dangerous and naughty things. And I feel like having the keys to the kingdom of a large language model or something as powerful as ChatGPT can be quite dangerous. Of course, there's a lot of computing power that goes into it. People don't necessarily have access to that side of it, but it still gives... just maybe too much away, right? To your average person that there's zero vetting happening.
Yeah, totally. I mean, this is a big debate in the AI kind of community at the moment, open source versus closed source. Because I guess, like, you have to choose between two risks. The risk of open source is, as Rad just explained, you know, anyone can get their hands on the technology and use it for their own ends. But the risk of not open sourcing AI is that four or five incredibly powerful tech companies are the only companies that have proper full access to the technology, further cementing their market dominance, basically.
What essentially we need is a mum. We need a mum who oversees all of this, who is kind and caring and just wants the best for us and guides everyone towards the light.
You want Gaia from Captain Planet, is what you're saying.
Oh my God. Yes.
This whole show became a really embarrassing indictment of aging millennials. Anyway, I think a mum idea is great. We will send that up the chain and see how it improves. Download this show is what you're listening to. And finally, very quickly on the show... on the off chance you happen to be a TikTok-obsessed person living in America listening to this, are you about to lose access to TikTok, Anharad? Is the US government about to crack down on TikTok?
They have certainly said that they are. They are looking to pass a bill that will ban TikTok from the US, part of the ongoing conversation where they're saying that TikTok is a tool being used to scrape data from our citizens and send it through to the Chinese Communist Party. That is a claim that TikTok and their parent company, ByteDance, have very, very strongly denied. They've said absolutely not, but US has been quite dogged about this. They really think it's happening and therefore are telling ByteDance that they have to sell TikTok within the next 6 months, otherwise the platform will be banned in the US.
Are they actually going to do that?
Probably. So if you recall, I recall being in this very studio talking about when Trump issued an executive order to ban TikTok within 45 days. That got held up in court and then Biden took over and then issued an executive order, unexecutiving ordering that.
Do you mean rescind? Is that what
word you're doing? Yeah. Like I said, more professional. Anyway,
Trump should have written no take backsies on it.
Yeah, rookie error. In the case of legislation, which they seem very enthusiastic about and which has bipartisan support, that will obviously... that take backsies are much harder on legislation as opposed to executive order. If they vote on this, which they will on Wednesday, it'll then go up to the Senate. So we'll know pretty soon whether or not they're actually going to do this, but it certainly seems likely.
That represents a huge, huge upending of the internet.
Yeah, and TikTok know that they have quite a large user base and they are trying to mobilize. They've put notifications pushed through on the app telling people to contact their representative and basically say, hey, we don't want this. And the kids are turning out in force. There are many people writing in or calling in. Whether or not that changes anything remains to be seen, because at the end of the day, this bill so far has resounding support. And feel a bit mean to say this, but who really cares what a kid who loves TikTok is saying to the Congress people?
Depends if you need that kid to turn out for an election in November.
Do they think that the crossover between people using TikTok and people voting is great enough that they need to care about it?
So we are recording this earlier in the week. There's every chance that some of this may change across the next couple of days. But are there other outcomes other than the it stays or bans? Are there kind of other outcomes which going to give the US government more control or more interventions in this process?
Probably not. So TikTok already has started a thing called Project Austin, which is about moving all the data it collects on America, its 170 million American users, to Texas, which is apparently not good enough for Congress. Their like interventionist method of like, we'll hold all of your data here so you can have oversight on it, was not good enough. With that not being good enough, the other option is someone buys it. So Bobby Kotick, who was the CEO of Activision Blizzard till like 2 months ago, has been rumored to be tried to raise money to buy it. Possible someone buy it, although when that was floated last year, China said it would not allow that to happen. It's not looking good for old TikTok.
I mean, in that regard, to necessarily give a free ride to the CCP here specifically, but I could appreciate why if a nation developed a hugely popular service and then the only reason for it to survive is for another country to effectively take or absorb it. I could appreciate, in that very specific window, I could appreciate why there would be an objection to that in China.
I agree completely. My first reaction to it was like, oh, it's a bit much. But then you do remember, not to give free ride to the American government, but then you do remember that China has banned Facebook and Google for like a decade now. So if the shoe is on the other foot, we have evidence that like we know what China would do.
It also does seem a little bit crazy to force like a ostensibly private company to sell something that they own. Like it, I can imagine that if ByteDance, for example, were completely separate to the CCP and they're being told you have to sell one of your biggest assets because we don't trust you because of where you originated, that would be super duper frustrating. And that by itself feels really, really unfair. But knowing nothing about business or how anything works, what if they just created an American TikTok that was a separate company to the original one and they have to pay dividends to the original TikTok or something like that? Like, surely some clever business person can find a solution that satisfies US lawmakers while still not cutting off the golden goose from ByteDance completely.
I mean, one other thing is probably worth talking about is if we're talking about where data is stored, right, and access to data, ByteDance, the owners of TikTok, are far from unique in that they keep their users' data in nations that are not where the users live. I mean, they're certainly not the only company that do that. Is it just the perceived links between the company? Well, is it purely about the perceived links between the company and whatever government access in China exists or doesn't exist?
Yeah, so like you said, the first worry is that data can be collated into kind of like profiles of people. So that data can be seen to say like, hey, this person might be more amenable to this kind of messaging, which leads to the second major issue, which is that the US government is worried that, for instance, in the event of a war with Taiwan, you know how many young people get their news off TikTok, that the algorithm will be twisted in a way to, you know, downplay certain political messages and emphasize other ones. So, like, that's unlikely to happen, like, just in regular life, but it's kind of like a panic button that they're worried that the government can press in case of emergency. I saw that Donald Trump backflipped and now he's like, oh, TikTok, it's a great company and a lot of kids like it. It would be a very 2024 result if the election was one off young people voting for Trump because they want to keep TikTok. I guess that's a good leaving thought.
Is that a good leaving thought or is that a good nightmare thought?
Yeah.
It's a thought.
It's a thought.
It's a thought.
It's a thought that makes you have to stop because you need to go lie down.
And that's my cue. Thank you both so much for joining us on another episode of Download This Show. Daniel Van Voorn from Capital Brief, thank you as always.
Thanks for having me.
You have proven yourself to be professional. Well done.
Thank you.
And Angharad Yo from the Game for Anything podcast. Your professionalism.
Professionality!
Was never in question. Yeah. Mine, though. And don't forget, you can listen to this and any other ABC show on ABC Listen. My name is Mark Fennell, and I'll catch you next week with another episode of Download This Show.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.